UFO files broadcast from unusual places. This is the first time to be at McCarran at the baggage claim area. But Andrew Fetter, I appreciate you meeting me down here.
You're very welcome.
You've been in Las Vegas 6 years now, so you're used to it.
Yes, I am. It's been very easy to come over here, and I'm glad to meet with you here.
I want to compliment you on your book, as we mentioned in the intro before we came here to the airport. I called it a parody, but it's really not that. It's got humor in it, all right.
Yeah, I try to spice some satire in it just to make it lighten up the situation I was trying to present within the book. Since it deals with some very heavy issues, I try to make things of the light because people take things, a lot of things, too seriously. I like to make things, you got to let know there are no sacred cows. You got to be able to laugh at things. And that was part of my point within my book, is look at that as well as the satirism and as well as the very serious issues between.
Yeah, we're talking about some subjects that get people really, as I say, in my part of the country, riled up. Politics and religion.
Yeah, I think a lot of people at the dinner table don't like to talk to those two parts, and that's the problem. I think in what has happened, and with especially in America, and what's going around the world, is basically the problems of politics and religion, how, and it's not just recent, so basically of humanity, is caused us to create a violence and to create us to be impoverished, and a lot of serious natures that are happening around the world. Basically because politics and religion, i.e., you know, Israel, the Palestinians, South Africa, everywhere you go.
Well, you just throw a dart at a map and you get a problem.
Yeah, basically. So, but my fundamental thing is, it's not just the real, I'm not taking a dig at scripture as religion. My dig is whether it was just as Jesus was saying, and whether a lot of clerics with the Buddha or Tao, was basically the fundamentals of the organize itself and how it's been used in politics to basically to manipulate and push down people's self-esteem. The product of my book is basically to show people if they had self-esteem and they could question things and they can look at what the, basically in the Bible says God of Abraham, God of Isaac, is everybody has their own view of God, and that's where the precept is. But I wanted to make it really an issue of what that is, and as far as what a true Americanism is, which is freedom and liberty and allowing people, having tolerance for what they have believed and believes in, and not force their beliefs, just like mine. I don't want to force my beliefs on anybody. They take it as a grain of salt, but then we respect each other and we move on our way.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that in a little bit, but off of that, you know, you moved here from L.A., you write a little satire. Some of it's pretty humorous, gets a smile on your face, even though it does have a message. You ever work in comedy in L.A.? Hang out at the comedy clubs?
No, but I do have a little bit of, I like to laugh, like I said, I like to laugh about things. I'm pretty sarcastic. Everybody says I'm get too sarcastic. Usually when I get more upset, I'll say things more sarcastically. So I do like, you know, comedy and sarcasm. And, you know, like I said, you know, no laugh, then you got to laugh at things, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that I like about the book, and I have a lot of people that come to me with interviews and they write serious books about things, and nobody pays any attention to them because they're kind of far out. And what I tell them sometimes is, hey, have you ever thought about writing fiction? You know, you can get a message out with fictionalized characters just as easily, I think.
Yeah, that's basically, I try to do a mixture of what some of the people that you'll see in the book have, you'll recognize as actual people, possibly. And like I said, they are based on fiction, but you can summarize that they are maybe of people that we deal with today, even though there is a lot of sarcasm.
Well, the main character here, Jerry, he seems like he's Andrew to me.
Yeah, and to some extent, we all, was it like Neil and a lot of writers, they put a little of themselves inside the character, because it is part of you in there. I don't care, it's your way of acting. You know, any actor or any artist, they put a piece of them in their art.
Well, now in the novel, the main characters had, oh, he's a little cynical, I guess, because he's had a few problems with the government.
Yeah, there's a bit, and partially because it's a basic starts off with a character who basically he's basically like a lot of people had low accounts of what has happened to them with government, whether it's the IRS coming down on them or state agencies or the issues of child support, whether it's the female or the male side, you know, the mother or father. You know, so this person basically is sort of cynical toward what, you know, and right to be. I mean,
and he comes to Las Vegas to start a new life. About half of this town's full of people starting a new life, I think.
That is basically the summation of it. That's why when I came out here personally, I tried starting a whole new life myself. It's totally changed what my careers were before, which were in construction. I also worked in film, so I had to start all over again. And a lot of people who come here, it is a dream to start all over and to start their new way of life, whatever they want to make it to be.
Now you're working for a major company now doing advertising promotion?
Yeah, I work for a major company that does graphic design for most of the casinos. They do the output and some of the design directly for the casino.
This is a town full of graphics.
Like you can see, you can look around just in the airport and how much graphics, and there's a constant change of graphics.
We've recognized that there's a little bit of you that moved to Las Vegas in this character, so you're writing that with feeling. But at the same time, you go on this camping trip, and I must tell you, I've had lots of interviews with experiencers, contactees, abductees, whatever you call them, and they sometimes run across ETs out in the middle of nowhere.
That is true. I mean, I've had a lot of that book, like I said, took part of me, but there were instances in that book that had parallel, like the drive along Vegas. Sometimes you have some I've actually went through a situation, not to sound like bizarre, but I did a long time ago drive with somebody here, and we actually lost 2 hours coming here, and that was from Baker to Las Vegas, and it was sort of weird because, like I said, Baker.
And of course, there's not much between Baker and Las Vegas.
Yeah, and there is. That was another issue I tried to bring into the book, which is about the whether UFOs or aliens and all that stuff, which we aren't not alone. I don't believe we're alone around the world.
And you suspect, I take it, and maybe you know that you've had some sort of ET experience, at least missing time.
Yes, and I base it on a lot of information that I have seen for the past. In fact, the character that you, I make reference to meeting an alien was based upon a tape that was from a German who was abducted in, back in the 70s, excuse me, the early 80s in England. And while I was watching the tape, the person kept on saying, using these words, Kadosh Kadosh Adonai Tzavot, and I was sitting around with people, and they couldn't understand what he was saying. Nobody knew what he was saying, and I'm going, wait a second, what did he say? And I go, repeat that again. And he go, wait, that's Hebrew. So, you know, it gave me a thought. I says, wait a second, maybe there might be a connection there that this, and this, by the way, the person that was abducted was put on, you know, polygraphs and tested and all that, and it was proved in England that he was actually not making this up, that he was abducted. And it was one of the instances of the so-called X-Files, like in Europe, that they don't like to talk about, but that was substantiated. But like I said, that's one of the products I brought out in my book and how I created that character.
Now in your book, it happens on a camping trip, I take it.
Yeah, basically, actually what I did was I wanted to create a situation where understanding between the connection between angels and aliens and etc. and from the Bible, and these are actually characters, the people who are sort of like remnants of some friends of mine. And I actually did one day decide to take a trip on my own, and I hiked up there, and actually when I hiked, all the events you say I saw them actually happen, the birds, the weather. This happened up in Icebox Canyon in an area in Red Rock. The weather got all of a sudden changed. It was really strange. It was very sunny, and all of a sudden it became windy and cold. and all of a sudden it misty and the little squirrel following me up all the way along. It was I wrote exactly what actually happened to me on that little hike there. So I take my experiences and then I put them on paper.
Now your extraterrestrials, the ones you have contact with, are not the grays or the weird ones at all. They're human like. They're angel like.
Yes. What I put in there, and everybody has their own impressions.
And I must tell you, I've run across three or four shows and interviews where people talk about seeing people like what you're talking about.
Well, this, like I said, is based upon information of aliens that have possibilities. Specifically, actually, I was talking about the character that was met from two different sources. One I just mentioned, describing the platinum looking person, alien, and also the one that I used the word cherubim, which is the smaller one, which is also described.
It's in the Bible.
Yes. And that's where I think there's a lot of mixture between what aliens and in the Bible. If you look in through the Bible, I can actually point out every single reference. And I'm not the first one. There's a book called called The Chariot of the Gods by Eric Hoffer. And he represented how there's a connection also with aliens within the Bible. I mean, if you look at the basic I put in there was about Elijah being picked up by the chariot of by the chariot up in the whirlwind. I mean, come on, that's if an average person back then who never saw an airplane and saw a spaceship picked up, what would you call it? If you saw a pillar of fire coming down from the sky, it would be a beam. What would you call it? There's a lot of references, even with Jesus walking on water, a lot of miracles. And we even have miracles today that are sometimes a little bit displacing or actually shut out from what we actually know or see or actually stifled from our own news just because it's so outrageous. To our native eye, it would be outrageous.
Now we're talking about your hero in this book coming back and becoming an object of attention because he's on a mission all of a sudden.
Yeah, and that was another basis I tried to create in the book in a parallel. I thought it was really important to, you know, even though he became a hero in a sense, what I try to present in the book is a spiritual person who most people would think he would be like a, you know, the Dalai Lama type, that he'd have to be, you know, all perfect, not say any profanity, and obnoxious, and not. But I was trying to take from the heart what a spiritually what is spirit being spiritually good in a sense, and that has nothing to do with what you say, but what's in your heart. And so I try to present that within the book. Here's like I said, there's a line I use in there: a Buddha man was walking, if I can say it, hard on, because he's sort of obnoxious, but he is spiritually attuned. And he does, in a way, become the modern hero, but he really isn't the hero. The book I present, the hero are the people themselves. Everybody, the American people, the humanity becomes the hero.
Now, a little bit of romance in this book, too, following up on what you were talking about. Does it involve extraterrestrials or just individuals here?
That I actually made
I have a reason for asking, but I want to hear the answer first.
Actually, I made a little twist in that book. You know, everybody here they have a little romance thing. That act, the thought, the person who was the character I put in mind, it actually is not a girlfriend in a sense in this book, but of somebody I created that I could visualize being. In that, and actually it's off of a character that's pretty famous, and I don't want to say the name because I don't get in trouble, that is pretty famous, actually an English star. But I wanted to create a romance that had the love-hate thing going, because that was from an experience, uh-huh. You know, and place that in there.
The reason I brought that up is I wanted to ask you, I have been doing these shows for a long time, and the only guy that I've ever talked to that seemed like he might be in love with an extraterrestrial was James Gillian up in Washington. His extraterrestrial is a goddess-type-looking blonde.
Well, this guy, he doesn't know she's extraterrestrial until the very end.
Okay.
So he's sort of like pulled into it. Yeah, that was the whole switch. And that was also the switch. There's like the so-called sex scene in there, which shows that she was able to enjoy herself in a multitude of ways, not normal for, you know, the average person, which I guess would be every guy's fantasy to some extent.
Yeah. So you got a vivid imagination, Andrew.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah, you've been in Vegas 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years, and it's what stays in Vegas happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, right. That's the slogan they have. By the way, when we talk about the government in league with extraterrestrials, angels, demons, etc. You really believe that?
Yeah, I believe there's some aspects of two sides. Like for everything, there's always a positive and a negative side. You know, and you call it evil, good, bad. And I believe that is essentially the same situation with as far as the ETs. As far I believe that there are actually two factions, two situations. There's too many things that are even happening on within our own planet. Unexplainable that have positive and then negative, positive and then negative. So maybe from our naive perspective, because we are pretty much, I think, of a unsophisticated society, that there is this situation possibly happening. And a lot of things have been closed up about what, you know, about what our own, how the U.S., our own government is technologically advanced and what things we have. Like Area 51, nobody want to talk about. Oh, there it is. All of a sudden, we have a stealth fighter out of nowhere, and you know, which is far beyond the norm of what we are technology. Not necessarily.
Well, you talk about things. The computer kind of came out of nowhere too.
Yeah, but I think that's built up. But you know, but see, then I go back to another subject that I bring into the book is, and this deals with souls too, which I do believe that we all have our. I believe in reincarnation. I believe our souls constantly re-embody itself, whether on this planet or another planet. And I think that's why we have essentially a different association. Some people come here and they feel so alienated. They even do drugs to medicate themselves because they don't feel comfortable where they're at. They hate where they're at, or they feel different. And yet you also have artists and people who are against the normal because they are of maybe not sourced from this planet. And I'm talking about their soul now. And then there's earthbound who are originally from here who are able to continue to go along the merry way of being actually act like a clone, you know, being told what to do, and they don't want to move up as long as they get, you know, being they like to be led and rather than being questioned. And I feel that the ones who are questioned are maybe the ones that have essentially are not necessarily from here, they're soul-bound, that's what I'm saying. Like I mentioned the book Star Souls and Earth Souls, and that's another fundamentalism I bring in the book.
And which are you?
I don't know. I know what I think, I believe, but, you know, I think that, like I said, everybody has their own beliefs, and I think even with... And there's another thing I was going to bring into my book about... You'll see a parallel. There's a parallel between a lot of beliefs between whether it's Judaism or whether it's Taoism or Buddhism or Hinduism, Indian American, Native American religions were very parallel, almost identical. And this is where I bring in the relationship that I have. There's humanity. There might be a connection between some sort of alien connection because it just transpond those thoughts and how that happened. Because if you're sitting there constantly changing in one body to another body, essentially, you're still bringing in all this information into that new embodiment.
I guess the question really is, and we're talking with Andrew Fetter, and we're at McCarran Airport, and we're here right where I came off the airline, and baggage counter may start in a minute. I notice we're Southwest over there. It's some kind of celebration. They may have heard that in the background, too. It's Vegas. What can we say? It's busy all the time.
Yeah, Vegas is pretty much busy all the time, you know.
The reason I wanted to bring it, whose ox have you gored in this thing? Politically and religiously? Or do you think you've damaged anybody?
If the one who would be really affected by my book, the people who are very religious, whether religious Christians or religious Jews, and specifically I know some very, very devout evangelistic Christians. When they read my book, they go, wow, this is, you know, I can really connect with it. Some of it's sort of scary for them because it deals with, it changes their perspective of what I present in the book of what Jesus really is. But my fundamental thing is that religion comes from the heart and not necessarily just from somebody telling you what God is. It's from your own heart.
I was very interested in that reaction, and I thought probably if they would get past the shock of it, they might really be accepted to it.
Yeah, actually, they've it opened them up. A lot of people are a little bit naive or never heard of it. Like, I've even had people who are like, how come you write God-D in my book? And I go, well, God...
You had a review that said that, too.
Yeah, the reason why it was God-D is because as a respect to my belief in God, that we don't know, you can't really know what I believe in God's name, so if you don't know his essence, then that's why I just put the initials. It's to give it, and I also put the essence that to me, my belief where God is an infinite form of everything included in ourselves, everything around us. Basically, it's more of an Einstein approach of what religion. Even if you ever saw the movie What the Bleep Do You Know, it relates to that a lot. Basically, we're all talking the same thing, basically.
Now, you're going to have a sequel, and you've already had a previous treatment, which you're not going to release till even later, I understand.
Yeah, I have a
Now, this book, what's the new book going to be called? Do you have a title yet?
Yeah, the new book, this book is When Angels Have Risen, but... The new book, the sequel, is called The Heretic, and it's the same main character from When the Angels Have Risen, and it's during a time of about a year, which we don't talk, it's not discussed in the book. And it's about a guy who, Jerry, he is regressed back in time through some events, and he finds himself back on the island of Crete during the time of Alexander the Great.
This, in other words, your belief in previous lives actually is coming through here.
Yes, that's part of the next nature. And there is also down the line, which I guess I'll squeal a little bit, there is a little alien connection in there too, which he finds when he meets his another romance in there, of course, in Egypt, during the events when he's riding along with Alexander the Great into Egypt, and he meets a priestess, and he goes underneath.
In your book, you do cover the fact about the Egyptian language and the Israeli language.
Yeah,
Hebrew
and. And how Egyptian and how it's, you know, the possibility of where a lot of the languages, you know.
You don't really remember any extraterrestrial contact personally, right?
No, I don't. Not in that sense.
See, I was going to ask you what language.
But I do, like I said, and in taking up to when you talk about language, is really distinct from when I saw that tape and that interview of this German citizen who was abducted in England back in the 80s, and I heard him say that, and when I heard that, was very distinguished when he said Kadosh Kadosh Adonai Svot, and nobody knew there because the way he was saying it in his German accent. And I went, wait, play it again. And then and this was the welcome that this alien had said to him, and then I realized Kadosh Kadosh Adonai Svot, and by the way, in English that means our Lord, our God, you know, holy, holy, the Lord of hosts.
Yeah, right.
So, and I was really, wow, oh my God, is there a possibility that, I'm not questioning, is this a possibility that a lot of our languages, even biblically, a lot of had influence from aliens? I mean, I'm just
you know, we're talking about reincarnation. I guess that applies to extraterrestrials, too.
That could be, or, you know...
Or do you think they're more godlike? You know, gods and goddesses. I mean, are they here forever or what? I mean, the characters you write about that Jerry comes in contact with, all are... They seem to me they're almost a deity.
To the human on Earth, he'd be considered look like a, almost like a deity, but really he isn't. He even explained to him, "Hey, we're not angels. We believe in God too. They're just like, I guess a little bit. If I want to put on a food chain, a little higher on the food chain than us, but they're just people too. But people from another planet, and they're technologically and spiritually more advanced." Than us, and from a different perspective.
I must tell you, personally, I agree there probably are spiritually advanced beings, but I think there's probably some that would like to do us in as well.
That's where I bring in the two sides. I believe there's two functions that are happening. I think it's not coincidental that, and this is where I bring in my book about biblical events that happen. If you look into every religion, the positive came out and also the negative. There's like, for example, Jesus coming out and preaching, you know, love and peace and, you know, and taking away from the organized religion and being the rebel and don't, you know, the payoffs and all that stuff, the money. And look what happened to, out of Christianity. It was been fabricated by Constantine and all the religions, all of Christianity has been formed into basically a bank. It's turned into 2,000 years of torture and killing, all in, not in his name, which he'd probably flip over if he was alive. So basically, and I think that was out of a darker side, a darker possibly alien influence, as opposed to a positive alien influence.
Yeah, we talked about it and touched about it a little bit in this show, and I've talked about it in the past with many guests. It seems to me that religion is a way to control people.
Very much. If you look on the organized religion to control people, but if you look from the spiritual end, there is like twofold. It's almost like if an alien came here and here's a book. It help you, like there's a book called from Dao Tse Tsung, which is I mentioned in my book, which basically that book was given to a soldier, tell him how to live his life. And here's a positive person. Now you take that same book and flip it around and have somebody, a cleric, tell you, now this is what I think what the book means and influence them. But you know what, if you come to me, I'll explain it to you. And by the way, when you do it, you're going to have to put some money on the table. And by the way, I'll tell you who's going to be your king and who's going to be your empowerment and who to choose for your president and who to choose your Congress and what laws you should believe in. Then it changes what the foundation of these scriptures are supposed to be. And this is what I bring in my book as far as between the fundamentals, between the influence, what there's two alien forms connections. Well, every, like I said, you know, in the it is said that there's an old there's got a book called the Book of Zohar. And in the very beginning, that's, by the way, a Kabbalistical book written by Rabbi Ben Sakai. And in it says, for every positive, there's a negative. God created the earth with two equal hands, both dark and light. And that's what they reference in the first, in Genesis, where, you know, out of light, you know, out of dark, he created light. Well, what's that? Dark out of light. Everything, there's a positive and negative. And that's also within alien forms, whether human forms and alike. And I think that's what's basically I present in my book. I feel there's a possible influence outside our what we can could look at.
How can these extraterrestrials don't make their presence known to everybody?
I think it does, and it does and doesn't. It's like there was a fact that happened, like the Indians or Native Americans, when Columbus first came to the Americas, and when they never saw a boat before, here comes a boat, and they didn't even know what it was. They couldn't even see it, and it had to be a medicine man who looked things differently, was able to prospectively see it, and it's a fact that man, if he doesn't recognize an object or something that he understands, he in his mind will not perceive it. So there might be things that we see and we don't really recognize. And
so they may be all around us.
Definitely, in different situations. You know, it's not a coincidence that, and not on Star Trek or anything, there's a lot of, you know, openness with what Roddenberry presented in Star Trek is, the different elements of aliens and different spatial forms and spatial situations that can be possibly within our situation that we can, because we're looking at things okay, the problem with our science, we have our sciences run on a finite basis. We see numbers, add, plus, you know, whatever. And Einstein even showed, and we're seeing now in physics, that it's, you need to run off a methodology of infinity. And if you're looking at things on an infinite basis, that means all those possibilities are infinite. And therefore, all the aspects of UFOs and aliens that we cannot recognize is maybe because they move faster than we can actually see.
In your business of graphics, Andrew, do you see an influence of your belief in UFOs and supernatural and angels and demons?
Not so much in the graphics, because basically the graphics we put out is very...
It's commercial, so you have to...
Yeah, it's very limited.
You have its time.
It's very limited on its commercial basis. And, you know, a lot of people, if you talk about aliens, there's people said, yeah, I believe it, but they don't want to say it. A lot of people feel it, but they don't want to admit it. And even people who are religious are starting to recognize it, but don't want to. I think there's certain...
well, that's even true with politics, too, you know.
Yeah.
I was talking to a guy the other day. There's a big booster of just the opposite political philosophy of me. And finally, he told me, he says, hey, for a long time I've agreed with you. I just didn't want to have to admit it.
Yeah, that's basically it. In fact, you know, it's funny you said that, is because I remember, now here I'll give you another perspective of what you said now. I went to a rabbi from to get my daughter her a mezuzah when she bought her house, and it was called a Chabad, a religious Hasid Chabad, part of the Chabad.
You don't look that old.
Yeah, I'm actually almost 48. Must be the alien in me. Okay,
yeah, it's a clean life.
No, I have to go into my module every now and then and get regenerated.
Yeah.
Let the force be with you. You know, but I, like I said, I think. Anyway, when I was talking to this rabbi. And we went through the whole subjects of, you know, I told him about my book. He says, I hope it's fiction-based, not real. I says, well, and I was trying to just get the mezuzah out of his hands and, you know, move my way. But after we start talking in language with the fundamentals of even Judaism, because he goes, you have to wear a yarmulke, you have to wear this, you have to do this. And, says, and then when I get, he says, how come in the most important thing they say in Hebrew, there's a prayer in Deuteronomy, what they call the Shema, and part of it says, you know, love your God with all your heart, with all your soul, all your might. That's the whole essence. That's everything. In fact, that's the only thing. And then he goes, yeah, you're right.
human nature is... interesting, and I guess that's actually the way the powers that be have controlled humankind over the centuries.
Yeah, I that's what I believe. I think it's I mean, we've moved technologically wise pretty far in advancement, and we're slowly moving forward as far as our awakening of spirituality. And I think also, now I'll bring us back to my book about different souls. I still believe that there are more, as you, like I said, there's earth-born souls and star souls, alien souls, reincarnates. And my colleague over here, he could possibly be, have from another, his soul from, not originate from our earth, because he might be one of the people why he's doing this subject, to open people's eyes, to open this door, and maybe in our lifetime, we'll actually go get an encounter recognized, and where we'll have communication. And if this happens, that we have a communication recognized with ETs from outside, that would change the perspective of humanity, because humans wouldn't go, oh, you're a Jew, you're a Christian, you're an Arab, you're a Muslim, you're, you know, whatever. You're just human. And that would change Earth. We would not, you know, it would change our outlook on everything on our planet.
I want to tell you something very strange. Maybe it's not so strange, but I've always just thought, and I'm not trying to say I'm holier than thou or anything like that, listeners, but I've always thought of people as being people, you know, not German, not Arab, not Muslim. But it's amazing to me, as I've gotten older and been exposed to this type of radio for 40 years, how many people really don't believe that we're all equal?
That's what's amazing. I think a lot of people And it sort of surprises me. I think, you know, I think for every...
It just seems logical we're all equal.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing you said that because come from L.A. where it was very multicultural, and so I came to Vegas. I didn't see so much things separated, especially racial, as much as... And there is racism, you know, like I've seen in L.A., but here even more so. And I didn't recognize that people... are still looking at people for like, oh, you're black, you're white, you're Jew, you're Christian, you're this or that. They're already putting people in little pegs and when to enable you, like liberal, conservative. Oh, then you must be like this. Oh, or you're like that. And they already look at you as not as a person, that you have your own sets of beliefs. And then, you know, I start really, most people, if you really come down to it, and I'll give you an example. Let me put it this way. I lived in Israel for about 6 years. One of my best friends is an Arab. Lives in Kfar Karam, which was not far from where I lived. I used to live in a village called Moshav Amikam, which was not far from, just a little south from Haifa. And people there used to go, how can you be friends with him? He's an Arab, but he's a good friend of mine. I like him. I look at him as a person. And this was like felt... inducted into me, and I guess it was thanks to my dad. We went through from the during the 60s, the Watts riots, and seeing how people are just people. And I like I said, living even there, I saw how, you know, the fundamental, even people don't really realize in the West Bank or the Arabs who live there, they, if you get down to all, they wanted to feed their families, and the Jews want to feed their families, but you have all these clerics that teaching hate, kill the Jew, kill the Christian. You know,
and yeah, but on the other side too.
And on the other side, we have problems with the, you know, everybody's got to be, and even worse. When I lived in Israel, you had very religious people who say you have to be more Jewish. You're this, and it was sort of funny, by the way, you bring that up. Is when I'm over here, I was a Jew, and over there, I'm American. So everybody, you know, wherever you go, they label and they figure you've got to fit in a little peg.
What do you think is going to happen in Israel? It seems to me that it's much like the United States, going backwards in a very, very harsh manner. Talking about the overall attitude. Do you see hope?
Yeah, actually, I think what's coming to the reality of Israel, you know, I mean, there are some things. Israel's, the people who are there still have, and you have to understand where they're coming from. People forget that. This is their last this is their ghetto. This is their last place, and this is their homeland. So, but the same token, what I think fundamentally is going to come to a reality, which I put out in several other, I write op-eds and all around the country, and including the papers here. And I think that there eventually is going to possibly, and I say this again, Jordan and Israel are probably going to have joint control of the West Bank and finish, and they already have peace relations, and it'll be dealt with. It's got to be a mutual respect between both sides, but that's got to be both sides. I think there's more sense of Israelis truly wanting to have peace than more than from the other side, because they've been indoctrinated for a lot of hate coming from...
on the Arab side, they don't really have a lot of hope. I mean, so when people are without hope, economic hope, I'm talking about, you get pretty vicious.
Yeah, well, if that's the part of the, when you have $1 billion that goes to not even 1 million people, and if you took $1 billion that was given to Arafat in the last 7-8 years, that was directly to the people, and you split that money, handed everybody a check, where do you think would the situation be right now? They would be living better than Americans, but that wasn't that did not happen, and therefore it created the situation. This is like, I get back to the issue of how governments and people fundamentally can cause very negative things. Look at Iraq, the same situation. They're going to be killing each other between Shiites and Sunnis over the same things. I hate you, you hate me, my God. I believe in my God better than you believe in my God.
And here again, billions of dollars going where?
Yeah, and what exactly. And then why we were there in the first place. And then you have the Iranian president now wanting to wipe out Israel, and all Americans and all the non-Muslims are evil. So you have the same And here, this is where I get back to the problem of organized religions. If you, you know, I hate to bring back what Lenin had said, if you took away all the organized religions and you open up the borders, then we had, we wouldn't have the things that were happening today.
You know, much of the things that we are doing these days in the world is, and I guess really looking back over the centuries, has been based upon ideology, religious ideology especially.
Yeah, and it seems like it's coming to a head, and I think that, even though, you know, for every positive, negative, there's always a positive, and it's the way you look at it. And
well, the darkest before the dawn type thing.
Yeah, and I think maybe we're coming to a head. Hope, and I'm pretty much a living optimist that maybe as bad as things are getting in the Middle East and the worldwide, people are. It's like this. Let me put it this way. I think there's a scare that people are now finding themselves and finding their self-esteem enough to question. And as they get more light from that side presents itself, people who are in control are scared, so they're pushing out hate and kill as to keep people down, and it more as that clash, it's going to bust. And I'm hoping and I believe that in the future that people will have enough self-esteem, I hate to say it, I can't say it on the radio, I don't know, but tell their clerics, hey, I think you're full of it, I know I can believe in God without you. I don't need to go and tell somebody they're less than them. I don't have to tell somebody I have to kill because they're different. I don't have to hate because they're different.
Well, we see, you keep mentioning the clerics, but we have some modern-day evangelist types, right-wing Christian types in this country that are saying the same thing.
That's very much true, and they're also very zealot Orthodox Jews who have
said the same thing too. I thought Israel was really making a lot of progress maybe 15 years ago.
It is, and see, that's all I didn't bring into it, because there is, when I lived there are areas where if as a Jew and I walk in there and it's very religious and I drive there on a Sabbath, I will get stoned as a Jew. They have a word, and this is why I bring in which Jews really don't talk about, but it is, there's a word they call, the religious Jews call non-religious Jews, in their sense, what they call non-religious.
Yeah,
they call them Pushe Yisrael, which means criminal of Israel. They literally call a Jew who does not completely follow the commandments, like it would be like evangelist saying to a Christian that you're not a good believer, you're going to hell, and not a religious Jew would tell another, a non-religious Jew that he's basically a criminal of Israel.
You know, we're about out of time here, but I appreciate you taking time and discussing a wide range of issues. As I can tell from the conversation, you've been around.
Yeah, I have.
Well, that's one of the requirements. Look at Hemingway.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, I used to wonder, because I've changed my profession so many times, lived so many lifetimes in this lifetime up to now. At first I thought it was very hard on me, but I look now that all these experiences I've had make me, you know, a better person as the way to look at things, you know, and to understand things a little bit in a more open mind.
The thing I fear is maybe and I hope you're right, that the spiritual element with the extraterrestrials is far above us on the feeding chain. But I fear that maybe there's, you know, I hate to say billions, but at least thousands of different races out there. Not all of them are developed.
That's true. Like I said, there's two sides, and I present in the book that there, you know, in this the Earth maybe has been controlled indirectly on a negative side, and hopefully there's a positive side that is coming to help influence certain things to positive health.
That's a good way to end the show. A little optimism. The name of the book again, and it's available.
It's When the Angels Have Risen. And by myself, Andrew Fetter. You can go directly on my website, andrewfetter.com, F-E-D-E-R, or it's also available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, and you can get it at your local bookstore, and if they don't have it, you can order it straight from them.
Okay, and we have a link to your website, Andrew. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Jerry.
Game.